B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics in bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper.
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper.
And Murray.
Gasper.
And Murray.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper Murray here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. I'm Jim Murray. He is a Globe columnist and now documentarian. Chris Gasper, working on his new project, I Did a Bad Job, the story of the 2018-2019 Boston Celtics. You can read about how he's putting this together in the Boston Globe. Column went up late yesterday. It's worth the read. We can't wait to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show in an hour to continue to pick at the festering scab, Chris, that is this season. And how it all came to a crashing halt for the Boston Celtics Wednesday night in Game 5 in Milwaukee against the Bucks. I don't even really care to talk about the game. It's just all the fallout from everything that's happened and what was this horrible season. Please tell the people about your documentary coming out soon. I Did a Bad Job, the story of the 2018-2019 Boston Celtics. Because for those that didn't read the column, it's not just simply about Kyrie Irving and his bitchiness and inability to make it, I don't know, gel or whatever the issues were behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of blame pie here.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some people that seem to be skating a bit, starting with management.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say I think, you know, Danny Ainge is skating a little bit. Now, first and foremost, obviously, we wish Danny a quick recovery and good health from the heart attack he suffered in Milwaukee. That's more important than basketball. But we are talking basketball on the show. And I just think when you look at a team that was deeply flawed, Jim, how can you not point a finger at the architect? He put this thing together. And they built a team where everybody thought there was a star, their starter. You know, I'm a starter. They don't have enough role players. They didn't have enough rim protection. They had too many wings. And they didn't have enough stability in the roster. If you're going to build a team around Kyrie Irving, for the coach, the rest of the roster has to have guys who are willing to accept their role, and it has to have clearly defined roles. It can't be a jumble that the coach has to figure out and a bunch of guys who think they're either on the cusp of stardom or on the cusp of a big payday. I think the whole thing was combustible. And what I wrote in my column, I said, I think Danny Ainge put together a collection of talent, not a team. And he sort of turned it over to Stevens and said, you figure it out.
Yeah, which is, this is where I think you're correct in saying that he doesn't get enough criticism. And it's a little tough right now because of the health issues that he's dealing with. And at the risk of sounding facetious, I don't know, are you surprised that the poor man had another heart attack? Now that you hear about the fallout and how bitchy this team was behind the scenes and everything that, you know, went wrong for them this year, I can't imagine the level of stress that guy's been dealing with. But that being said, for a guy with his resume, both as a player and as president of basketball ops and GM of this team, it felt like, to me, like he stuck his head in the sand with a lot of these guys, specifically Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
Like, you should have known, dude. You've been around big personalities. You've played with them. You've had to handle them. You've brought them in as the GM of this team. You should have known. You should have sent that guy packing, at the very least, at the trade deadline, maybe before the season, because you should have known it wasn't going to work.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think that the counterargument people say is, well, what if Kyrie got hurt? And, yeah, that's fine.
Big if. Roll the dice.
But let's be honest. Like, if Kyrie got hurt, and I know they made it to the Eastern Conference Final last year, but the East was so weak. If Kyrie got hurt, you weren't winning a championship. Like, you built this team to try and win a championship or make it to the finals. So you got to build the team and sort of look at it and say, Kyrie's our guy. With him, we have a chance to win it all. Now, if Kyrie gets hurt, then everything goes out the window. I just don't think you can sort of be like, well, you know, okay, if Kyrie gets hurt. And there are other guys you can find in the league who are suitable backup point guards who are okay being a backup point guard. Like, I was talking to somebody.
Brad Wanamaker was fine.
There were people who felt like Wanamaker should have played more, you know, because he was more suited to the role and he was also a better defender in a lot of ways. And it was pretty clear. Here's the thing with Rozier. You go back to last year. When he played his best, it was when Kyrie was hurt and he was guaranteed shots and minutes. Like, I could have told you, and I said this. This part is not hindsight. I said at the beginning of the season when we talked about this team, Terry Rozier, there's no proof that he can function in this role, that you can give him a smaller slice of the minutes and that he's going to be able to produce, take the same thing that he gets in 30 minutes and be able to give you some approximation of that in, say, 17 minutes. That's not the way he's built, and we've never seen him function that way. So why do they think he could do it this year?
Yeah, and again, that's the number one guy to me.
And he was a real pill this year.
Yeah, Danny Ainge should have known. It was not going to work there. So, okay, I think you're right in saying that he hasn't got enough criticism. And then there's the coach. How much did, I guess, for lack of a better term, legacy, how did the legacy of Brad Stevens, how much of a hit did that take with this season? At least he owned it with some of the stuff that he was saying after Game 5.
Oh, that's where the title of my documentary comes from.
Yeah, I did a bad job, the story of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics. But, you know, the speculation was for a while, like, hey, can this guy deal with big personalities? He hasn't had to deal with the NBA divas. When there was rumors a couple of years ago that the Celtics were maybe sniffing around DeMarcus Cousins, and we had the whole bring me the a-hole thing on Fellowroom Mass because I was pro bringing DeMarcus Cousins and Jimmy Stewart, who I believe is as plugged in as anybody when it comes to the Boston Celtics and his underground sources, said, okay, I think Ainge, well, I believe that Ainge wants him, but it's the coach that doesn't because he didn't want to deal with the big personality. Well, isn't it proof this year with what has happened that Brad Stevens can't do that? Like, he's more of a college coach than anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, certainly it was a lesson for Brad the entire season. I think it was a difficult lesson to learn about what it's really like to coach in the NBA, because a big part of coaching in the NBA with the championship team is being able to marshal personalities and manage personalities and outsize personalities and deal with superstar players who basically feel like, frankly, they're above you on the hierarchy of the team. And he really hadn't been in a position to deal with that before. Look, we all know that Isaiah Thomas was someone who at times would push back a little bit, could be a little recalcitrant. But at the end of the day, deep down, I think Isaiah knew he owed some sort of debt of gratitude to Stevens for giving him the opportunity to show what he could do.
Yeah.
Right? Irving comes in there and he's like, I won a championship. I'm the number one pick. Like, I don't owe you anything. And I think, you know, Brad's been fortunate his time in the NBA that he had teams with guys like Isaiah Thomas, like Jay Crowder, guys who had like something to prove, who had that chip on their shoulder and that were going to go out every night and play hard because they felt like they had to prove they belonged in the NBA. Well, this team was different. You get Kyrie Irving. You have two number three picks in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. You have guys who feel like they should be starters in the league in Rozier and Marcus Morris. And it wasn't just the motivation for this team wasn't built in. If anything, this was a team that felt that they were owed stuff. Like they could just, you know, roll the basketballs out there. And because they were so good, you know, other teams should just fall at their feet. And I feel like Brad never really was able to reach those guys or sort of adjust to having a team that didn't have that built-in motivation.
Oh, it's a good point. And that's, you know, that's the lyrics to that song. Don't know what you got till it's gone. And that's how I feel about the Bridgie Celtics, which throughout this season.
You?
I've said now a few times. On
you
the
mocked that team endlessly.
Mercilessly. But I have said, I have made my apologies many times throughout this Celtics season, this awful Celtics season. I grew a greater appreciation for those Bridgie Celtics, and now more than ever. Now, granted, I knew what the ceiling was. That's why I called them the Bridgies. That's why I wanted Danny to blow it up, which he did. But they at least gave you max effort night in, night out. And those guys, like Isaiah Thomas, like Jay Crowder, Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk, they all played with almost like a debt of gratitude to Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
And that can only take you so far, but at least they gave you effort. And that matters so much to Boston sports fans. And I think that's one of the main reasons that most people at this point want to kick Kyrie Irving right the hell out of the state. See you later. Go to New Jersey. Go to wherever. Maybe L.A. We have some sound we're going to play over the next few hours that's pretty interesting because I feel like that's picking up steam that he may want to go and reunite with LeBron James. Oh. But I do have a greater appreciation for that team and what they did because what we saw this year is just gross. And we'll get to Kyrie. But the other thing that was really disappointing was the play and the attitude of some of the other younger guys, specifically Tatum and Brown, and maybe more Tatum than Brown, because at least Jaylen Brown gave you, I think, a little bit more in this playoff run. And towards the end of the year, he finally accepted his role of coming off the bench. Tatum, though, major disappointment, because I think I wasn't alone here. Going into this season, I thought, based on how he played in the playoffs last year, his season last year, he was going to play himself into being one of the top 10 players in the league. And he was anything but.
No, I mean, he really, you know, I don't think he made any real progress offensively. And then he didn't make any progress defensively, which was an area that he needed to work on. And when I look at his game, and I like him a lot as a player, and obviously he didn't meet the expectations we have this year, but I'm not ready to condemn him and say, well, he's never going to get any better.
Oh, agreed.
But the reality is, if you look at him now, if he's not scoring What does he do?
Oh, the defense goes wayward. He doesn't give a rat's ass. That Kobe fallaway jumper, man, he has got to get the taint of Kobe Bryant off of him. And you said it, I think, last week, and it was, you know, in preseason. It's funny how this we can all see things clearly now. I think it was the game in Charlotte in the preseason. That was the one afterwards that Brad Stevens says, we're not as good as we think we are.
Yeah.
You're watching that saying, like, ooh, this fadeaway jumper, if it ever comes for Tatum, he's going to have something here. Well, it never happened.
It never happened.
And maybe that's one of the things Brad Stevens was talking about at the time. Oh, I can't wait for more fallout here. I need all the juicy details and all the hit pieces. But that thing, like, he's got to get that Kobe influence off of him.
Yeah,
stop bitching
twos.
To the refs too, dude.
Yeah,
like, you've been in the league
ISO.
A couple of years. Like, who the hell do you think you are?
It's a great point. Yeah, always complaining to the officials about what's going on. Too much sort of ISO. Like, I'm just going to back this guy out and take him. And then I saw this stat the other day, and I think I'm quoting it, you know, correctly. But basically, they got of like 95 qualified players in like isolation points per isolation possession. He was like last.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like the numbers are really bad. Like, his ISO numbers are shockingly bad. And that's so much of how he played this year. And he didn't take a step forward. There's no question about that. And then, you know, for the young guy, I thought Jaylen Brown, you know, Terry Rozier said he was the guy who had to sacrifice the most. I thought it was Jaylen Brown, to be honest with you. I mean, he got knocked out of the starting lineup. And he basically had to watch a guy who didn't deserve minutes ahead of him, play ahead of him, but every time he missed a defensive rotation, he was yanked out of the game. Like, I think this was one of the issues. I think Brad lost a little credibility with some of those young guys with the force feeding of Gordon Hayward. And the Celtics made a conscious decision that we're going to give Hayward minutes because we want him to get back to what we need him to be good in the playoffs. And he was a ghost in this Milwaukee series. I never want to hear like another Gordon Hayward is back again until he's actually back.
And that's the other guy before we get to Kyrie Irving. As you put together your documentary, I Did a Bad Job, the story of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics, the new documentary coming out on Netflix by Chris L. Gasper, Christopher L. Gasper of the Boston Globe. Is Gordon Hayward one of the main guys that's also skating here when it comes to criticism?
Well, it's hard, right. I think he is, Jim, but you know, we all understand what he's been through. And I think the Celtics sort of set him up in a lot of ways to be a scapegoat or lightning rod. They believed they could get him back to the player he was prior to that gruesome ankle injury. And also they sort of force-fed him minutes when he didn't really deserve. And that's one of the other things to go back to Stevens. Like, so often with the past Celtics teams, it was so clear that they had a culture that this is a meritocracy. Like, you got to earn your minutes. And then Hayward comes there. He has a pre-existing relationship with Brad. And it's like, well, this guy doesn't have to earn his minutes. And I think that rubbed a lot of those guys the wrong way. I really do.
And that's something I don't blame them for. Because I'm a big believer in, you know, self-awareness, having to check yourself, play for the greater good as a professional athlete, all that kind of stuff. But I would be super pissed if I was on that team and saw how many minutes that stiff was getting. Especially, and there was games where he flashed, but early in the season.
Especially early.
Like, they really tried to force it. Or Brad Stevens really tried to force it with that guy.
Yes, he completely. I mean, I vividly remember it was a game that they called the team meeting after the loss to Milwaukee. I remember watching Tony Snell. See, he had Gordon Hayward on him. Tony Snell waving off his teammates for an ISO, backing up beyond the three-point line and driving right by him for a layup. And I was like, this is what it is now? I mean, he really struggled at the beginning of the year. He made significant strides and got better. But the idea that, I mean, I think we talked about this last week on the show. I would say he is at best, 75% of what he was before the injury. At best. I mean, I feel like I'm being generous there. It's probably more like 65 to 70. You know, and it was like, he's back. He's like, no, he's not back. And he never was back. This year, he wasn't the same guy. And in this series, the moment he couldn't get by Brook Lopez in game three, his entire countenance changed, his body language. It was like, oh, this is what I'm dealing with. Like, my body's betrayed. And I feel like he lost all his confidence.
All right. Well, we've spent this first segment on those that didn't get enough blame. And I Did a Bad Job, the story of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics, the documentary coming out soon from Chris L. Gasper, the Boston Globe. Now let's get to the guy who deserves the most of it, Kyrie Irving. Coming up next, we'll get to him here on Gasper and Murray. Good morning, everyone. It's 90.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Nail done, hair done, everything did. Nails done, hair done, everything did. Oh, you fancy, huh? Oh, you fancy, huh? Oh, you fancy, huh?
Kyrie, Chris Gasper, Boston Globe. Have you ever had a three-game stretch like this in the playoffs, and how mentally challenging is it?
What do you mean?
Have you ever had a shooting stretch like this? I think it's now at this point 19 for 62.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah,
And that's the voice of my co-host, documentarian and fancy boy, Chris Gasper. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub, asking Kyrie Irving. That was after game four about his terrible shooting night. Don't make my pal Gasper do math on the fly, because he'll get you, Kyrie. Still a pain in the ass. As you are putting your documentary together here, Chris, this, I did a bad job. The story of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics. You can read about it in the Boston Globe. You posted it yesterday. In this treatment for this project you're putting together, you say we can't leave out Kyrie. It's nice that Marcus Smart, who is the real leader of this team, which I agree with, by the way, came to Irving's defense Thursday. Smart said Irving shouldn't be singled out for the brunt of the blame for the Celtics' failure to launch after Irving shot 25 of 83 in four consecutive losses. Those numbers really are awful.
Yeah, it's real bad.
But as Irving said, this is what he signed up for. That's how it works when you're the face of a franchise. Irving has to own this. He has to wear this. He has to accept it. He has to use it to become the player he wants to be. Dodging and ducking responsibility for his primary role in a season gone sideways is conduct unbecoming. Boy, you're so nice with that. He needs to express in blunt terms, like Stevens did, that his performance wasn't good enough. And I agree with that 100%. I think most Celtics fans, if not all Celtics fans, would agree. The question is, you think he actually will? Because I don't.
I don't think he'll do it anytime soon. You know, maybe if he ends up re-signing here, it's probably going to be one of those things where he's going to get some advice from if he re-signs here and say, look, you got to address last year at some point and just say, you know, it was a major disappointment and, you know, you were disappointed in the team as well as in yourself and, you know, you're going to be better. It's pretty simple. I mean, it's amazing in sports, particularly in this city, it's amazing how far just a teeny weeny bit of self-flagellation goes in this market. People love it. Like, it's the easiest thing in the world to do, to just say, like, you know, I wasn't good enough. I have to be better. You know, we weren't good. Or how about this? We weren't good enough, and it starts with me. Done.
That's well, I think that's
people would go nuts for that if he ever said that. That would be it.
Yeah, because I think one of the great charms of being a Bostonian and New Englander is our overall self-deprecation and self-hatred.
Yes.
That's one of our nice little charms here. And that goes a long way with pro athletes. And I just don't think that he has it in him. I really don't. And if he was to sign and come back, like, they have to force him to do that. Even if he has to get with an acting coach. Like, you're like, listen, like, you got to sell this. Because I'll tell you, and it's one of the things I brought up with Felger and Maz after this all, you know, fell apart in the last week. If you're the Celtics, just from a marketability and business standpoint, how the hell do you sell this guy right now?
It's tough. It's definitely tough. He's such a wonderful basketball player. I mean, he's so talented. You didn't see that in the Milwaukee series. That I think, again, if he comes back and all he has to do is say those words, we weren't good enough and it starts with me. And then what you start to see him play again, I think it will go away. And we've seen this. I mean, your guy, David Price, like, this is a pretty, you know, it's a hard market, but it's a pretty forgiving market if you win. And you know what I always say about winning, the ultimate deodorant.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how much you think somebody stinks or you don't like their attitude or their personality or whatever. I mean, if they start winning, it's sort of like all is forgiven. So there's clearly a path back for him from a PR standpoint, you know, if he's willing to do it. But really, the bigger question for me, and I've felt this way since February, is like, is he coming back here? And you know how I felt about their postseason run.
Yep.
It wasn't just about making sure they weren't a failure this year in terms of the regular season was bad and they could sort of salvage it, redeem themselves. It was about having one last final plea, one last closing statement to Kyrie to say, this is the place you want to play. Do you think he feels that way after that series?
No, not at all. And so the fact that he shot just a hair over 30% in those last four games, never mind all the bitchiness and stuff, just from a basketball standpoint, the way that he played in those four games, is it simply just about attitude and quit there, or have we collectively overrated what this guy actually is as a basketball player?
I mean, I think that Milwaukee did a really good job defending him. Their length at the rim, I think, hurt him, and they were forcing him left, and I don't know what happened to his jumper and his outside shot. I mean, it just disappeared. So I think that we probably have overrated him a little bit. You know, he's a wonderfully talented player, but he still is on the small side, and there's less margin for error for those guys. Whether you're looking at somebody, whether it's Isaiah Thomas or Allen Iverson or, you know, Kyrie Irving, it's a little bit more difficult than if you're a 6'7", 6'8", wing. The other thing I will say in his defense is that I thought that early on, game two, game three, he was making the right play a lot of times. Like, they were cutting him off at the rim, doubling him, blitzing him off the pick and roll, and he was passing to the other guys and they weren't hitting shots. And so I think at a certain point for him, he said, forget this. Like, these guys can't be trusted. They're not going to make the right play. So now I'm just going to do it myself. But he couldn't. He just couldn't get it done. I mean, it's almost inexplicable how poorly he shooted. Their defense, or shot, I should say, their defense was excellent. But what the heck happened to his jump shot? Where did that go?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what made no sense. Like, because I've seen it before. We've all seen it. Like, that's where it's like, well, wait a minute. Did we overrate this guy? Like, that was his thing. Like, he's just such a natural shooter. It's beautiful. And then just went completely wayward.
Nothing.
So was that quit? Was he hurt? I don't think he was hurt. Like, it's just, it was mind-boggling. The whole thing, really. It was, but in a sick way, can you agree that it really was a fitting end for how this whole season was? Like, wasn't it just perfect?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But, Cohen, like, you were out on this team for a while like I was, and I think you kind of got duped after game one in that blowout, and it's like, oh, well, they're going to stick it right down our throats again, just like every other team that you dealt in this market, and they've, you know, heard all the noise, and they're using it, and it's like what the Red Sox did last year. At least that's what that bullpen did in their playoff run. The Patriots certainly did it, true or not, in their postseason. This team, no, they lived up to basically every negative thing that we said about them. But wasn't it a fitting end, though, with what happened Wednesday? I don't know how you were, but at the end, I was like, good, pour it on, Milwaukee. Like, blow them the hell out of the building.
100%. That was the least surprising finish to a season I've ever seen. Like, that series was over by the time, you know, the Kyrie... I gasped when you were talking to Kyrie after game four and the who cares thing. I could not believe what
really?
He was talking about. Yeah, I thought it was unbelievable. And to see them just lay down the way that they did in game five, that was the most predictable thing. If you'd watched this team all season long, just no fight throughout the season, I thought that was super predictable. Yeah.
Luke in Vermont, one of the biggest green teamers there is, typically calling in on Felger and Maz. What do you make of all this? And I see you wanted to talk about Gordon Hayward specifically.
Just quickly on Kyrie first. It wasn't really about Milwaukee's defense. I know they did a good job, but do you remember earlier in the year, he dropped 47 or 48 on Kawhi when they beat Toronto. He's done it to Klay Thompson in the finals. That was all about Kyrie. He just had a bad series, and I don't know why, but everybody's as bad as you guys have been saying for 3 days on Felger and Mass. Everybody was that bad. But I really, really believe it all goes back to the Gordon Hayward injury. It's not Danny's fault he got hurt. It's not Brad's fault he got hurt. You said earlier, Gasper, that Gordon Hayward hurt Brad Stevens' credibility this year, and he did. But he was supposed to help his credibility when he first came. If he was an all-star and playing at the level they expected, he could have went to Jaylen Brown and Tatum and said, hey, listen to Brad. He's made me into this all-star. Kyrie and Horford, Horford and Hayward could have kept Kyrie under the ether. That injury set things in motion that were never able to be undone. And it was a bombshell that will forever be remembered as the team that failed. And I think it all goes back to that.
Yeah, so you're right, Luke. The only thing I'll say, though, is like, so that injury happened the first game of last season. So they knew going into this season that they weren't dealing with that Gordon Hayward, and they built a team not planning that he was – they thought he would be back at some point, but I think that they were realistic in knowing, like, from the jump, we're not going to have the Gordon Hayward we thought we were signing. And so they had some idea that that was happening. Like, it wasn't like last year when all of a sudden it's like, what are we going to do now? We lost Gordon Hayward 5 minutes and 45 seconds into the season. So I think you could have planned for that better. And I think the first 15 to 18 games of the year, when it became pretty apparent that he wasn't the same guy and that he needed more time, you could have adjusted the plan there. And I feel like they took him out of the starting lineup, which was fine. But yeah, you're right. They just sort of kept forcing it, thinking it was going to pay off in the end. And I think it ended up being far more detrimental to the team than helpful.
And so many times, even if he wasn't a starter, you'd look down the day after and look at the stat sheet, like, why did he get 26 minutes or something like that? Like, it made absolutely no sense.
And why did he get 26 minutes when Jaylen Brown – I remember the game that Golden State was here. Jaylen Brown was playing well. He played well in the first half. And Brad basically iced him. He didn't put him in until, like, really late in the third quarter. And Hayward was horrible in that game. Horrible. And he got in earlier than Jaylen Brown in the third quarter. And I know why Brad likes Gordon. Gordon makes really good decisions with the basketball, and he's a good facilitator. And I get that, and I understand trusting that guy because he knows your system and your offense. But at the same time, like, this is the NBA. If you're out there and you're not really a scoring threat, the other team catches on pretty quickly.
If you want to continue to pick at the carcass of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics, have at it at 617-779-0985. And while the season of discontent has come to an end, now comes the tumultuous offseason. And I'll tell you what is picking up steam. Kyrie Irving going to the L.A. Lakers. We'll get to that coming up right after the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone. It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
You know, I love the band, the Eagles. They fought the whole time.
Yeah.
They were together and great. They broke up, had some individual success, got back together. They're always better together. It's never easy with the Eagles. They fought the entire time, together, apart, together. Kyrie and LeBron, it's never been perfect together. They both think they're ones. One is, one isn't.
Mm-hmm.
What about Kyrie? What about LeBron being an active recruiter on Kyrie Irving?
I think they are the ones who know how good their relationship is. I think they are in a good spot right now. Whether they want to be teammates, again, I'm not quite sure. But you brought up a great point. Kyrie is a Hall of Fame number two guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. James Worthy, Hall of Fame number two guy. Scottie Pippen, Hall of Fame number two guy. He's not a number one guy. So if he comes to that realization and he wants to come to Los Angeles and team up with LeBron, that is their best case scenario.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. So that's FS1's Colin Cowherd, whose wacky analogies I always find very entertaining. Speaking to Arash Markazi, who covers the Lakers for the LA Times, talking about the possibility of Kyrie Irving going back to his daddy, LeBron James, joining the Lakers this summer. This is picking up steam. This has started to pick up steam over the last, like, 48 hours. And I just, they're like the Eagles. So does that mean Kyrie's Glenn Frey, LeBron is Don Henley, or Joe Walsh? Joe Walsh was probably the most talented of the Eagles. Anyway, don't want to go down the music road too much here, but this is starting to pick up. This was alluded to just yesterday, or really on Thursday, right after Game 5's hideous loss on Wednesday night by executive producer of Felger and Maz, Jimmy Stewart, at I Am James Stewart on Twitter. Don't doubt his sources. Who believes that a phone call was made by Kyrie Irving to a certain unnamed former teammate right after Game 5, to essentially say to this unnamed teammate, I might have made a mistake. How's things looking over there in that unnamed area? Don't doubt the sources of 1J Stew, because it's funny. This has started to pick up steam. Colin Cowherd, Arash Markazi, who covers the Lakers for the LA Times, alluding to this. Oh, and we have more sound to play about this, too, because all of a sudden, this has started to pick up steam. Can you imagine, Chris? Now, I think he's gone anyway. I, personally, like a lot of Celtics fans, want him gone. I don't care about the level of talent.
See, I don't. I want him back.
I know you do. I know Maz does. I know others do, too. Me? I majority rules. I'm with the majority on this. See okay. You, bye. We'll figure it out later. I'm good. I don't want Kyrie Irving
please
back
come
here
because
I don't think that's going to change.
I won't ask any more questions.
But just on this, if he goes, and don't make you have to do math on the fly either if he does come back, Kyrie. If he goes to the Lakers, I mean, what a hit that this guy will take legacy-wise. If he hasn't already, but to go back to LeBron, to join LeBron after everything that he said, and I know that there's a thaw there because I called Bron during the season. But holy crap, if he goes and joins the Lakers, ultimate villain. Like, the biggest villain in Boston sports history.
But do you think any of that would matter to him? Like, Kyrie,
no,
he doesn't
course
care.
Not, because he's mercurial.
Yes, he is mercurial. Yeah, fickle is another word you could use. But look, I think that, I said this to Felger as well, because he's like, well, you think Kyrie's going to, you know, have this declaration on October the 4th in front of all those fans and then not live up to it? I'm like, yeah, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what I think. He doesn't care what the fans think. He's going to do what's best for him. And as he said, you know, he doesn't owe anybody bleep. That's the way that he feels. And if there's one guy in the league that's contrarian enough to say, I'm going to go straight from the Celtics to the Lakers in NBA free agency and leave the Celtics high and dry, it's Kyrie. Because if he feels like that's what's best for him, that's what he's going to do. He doesn't care about public opinion and what other people think he should do. That he doesn't care about that. And to the point that I've said this to you before, he's so resistant to the idea of following the crowd, of doing what people expect, that I almost feel like you have to use reverse psychology on him and convince him it's like it's his idea and it's not. So like if you want him to come back, the South Ainge almost has to be like, I don't know, man. We're not sure you're really, you know, good enough to be the champ. And he'll be like, I'll show you. I'm coming back. I'm going to show all you guys. I'm going to come back here. And you're like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, but if you're there fawning all over him, I feel like he's going to be like, no, I don't need you. I'm good. I'm going back to unite with Big Brother Bron in LA.
Since I've known you, and I know how you feel, and I, for the most part, yeah, I agree with it. Like, in that you know, pro athletes shouldn't be just in this one box and stay in your lane. If they have other interests, they should be willing to talk
about it. They're human beings.
You and I have a, you know, we obviously agree on what Martellus Bennett is doing, walking away from the game and putting out Dear Black Boy and stuff like that. I'm all for that. But this guy, I feel like Kyrie Irving has put your head in a pretzel, because even though he does that kind of thing, he's just a giant a-hole. Like, like, even you, like, you can't defend this kind of behavior.
No, and so, what, you know, again, you know how I feel. Like, I'm all about athletes reminding people that they're human beings and they don't exist solely to play their sport and entertain other people. But it is...
It's just a cop-out for this guy when he uses that.
Yeah, it's grating on me. Like, you know, after game five, the... You know, do things that human beings do. And like, it's all
just trying to get back to Boston. What's someone going to beat you up on the plane back?
Yeah, like I feel like he's using it to dodge responsibility. While it is a valid discussion that we need to have in sports, I feel like he's using it as a shield. And that bothers me a little bit. And I think that in some ways, it delegitimizes the guys that try and use that for real.
Derek in Acton, you're next here on Casper and Murray. What do you want to say about Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, hey, guys. The thing that really got me was last year when he didn't show up to game seven. The moment that happened, I said get rid of him. And I was hoping that they were going to try to trade him for Kawhi, although I don't know if that was going to be realistic. But,
oh, they tried.
For Kawhi?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they tried.
Really?
Wait, okay. Well,
and I'm going to let you go on that, Derek. What's this now?
Yeah, I mean, this has been discussed on this station. It's been discussed in the Felger and Maz program, I believe.
Oh, Brown. Okay. All right. Yeah, I got twisted up in that for a second. So what Derek just said, this is in a long list of many things that I've got wrong in terms of sports predictions in my life and things that I've talked about at the time. I couldn't have been more wrong about this, too, because I thought that there was a mountain out of a molehill at the time. Game 7, Kyrie not going to be there because he's going to get the nose job or deviated septum surgery, whatever the hell it was. It was a nose job so he could, you know, do his stupid junket for the Uncle Drew movie. I didn't think it was a big deal. I think that turns out that was kind of a big deal. That's a bad look that he wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, and probably, again, sort of separated him a little bit from those young guys. So those young guys are sort of feeling like we did it without Kyrie. He didn't want to be a part of it. This is our accomplishment. You know, it's sort of hard when you're not there. And I wonder if at all, if that was something that, like, wounded Kyrie, like, wounded his ego, the idea that the team was able to go that far without him, and it was difficult for him to watch.
Yeah, I think thinking about it now, like, if we're going to, you know, with the way that this whole thing fell apart and with what's leaking out, yeah, I think that there was a level of self-consciousness there on Kyrie Irving's part, and that's why he wasn't there. Like, oh, they didn't really need me for this. Mm, I don't want to be there. Mm.
Yeah. Here's the thing with Kyrie. I think he really, and I think probably to people in his circle, he's admitted this. I think he really struggled this year to find the right mood and method and message for leadership. You know, I think it was a lot harder for him. I think he sort of felt like guys were just going to fall in line, and maybe on another team, and this goes back to the role player thing, maybe on another team with more role players or guys that just want to win a championship and that don't have a lot of individual goals about who they're going to be in the NBA, that would have happened, but it didn't. And I think he got more pushback than he expected, and then he didn't respond well to it, and he went about it the wrong way, and it just exacerbated the issues with the young guys. And, like, you know, it's in my column today. I spoke with someone, you know, close to the team before I wrote that column, and they were like, look, you know, Kyrie's a different breed. He's night and day with the moods. It can be tough, but it's not all Kyrie's fault. Like, those young guys didn't really respond well to criticism and didn't really want any criticism.
Oh, I can understand that. And look at the off seasons that they had with Jaylen Brown sitting with Busty Taylor Rooks there, who's great at the job, but very attractive, saying, oh, it's not just going to be one title. It'll be like five titles in the next five.
We've all
to
been
six
there
years.
Trying to impress a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not seven, Taylor. Seven. But I'm going to win seven titles.
Jason Tatum and the Kobe Bryant influence and how many magazine covers he got.
Oh, totally.
He got a big head, too.
He did.
So I can understand that. So, look, while the Celtics are certainly deserving of all your scorn, and we'll continue to take your calls. If you're hanging, I promise I'll get to you. 617-779-0985. We do have the Sports Up Celtics show coming up, but I do want to pause and talk for a minute about the team that deserves all of your love and attention right now. That's the Boston Bruins. And specifically something as it pertains to instant replay in the NHL and in sports. I know you wanted to bitch about that, Chris. So we'll get to that coming up next. Long commercial-free segment. Gasper and Murray, 98.5, a Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
High slot Jones, wrister coming in, deflected, and it sails into the netting.
That hit the
Anybody
netting?
Spotted? Yes. Out in front, fired, they score, they've got
hit
a check.
Hit
they
the
got
netting.
A check.
That should have been a whistle. The initial shot came in and hit the netting in the back. Bruins are right off the bench right now, going to complain. There should have been a whistle.
So they'll take a look. This puck left the surface, came back into play.
Those are not even a conference. They're saying they didn't see it. This is unreal.
It doesn't matter. Toronto should be able to indicate that there's a mechanism in place for this very thing.
I mean, what if that's an overtime? It didn't cost us, but I think it's just funny that, you know, they can look at a lot of other kind of goals and call them back from the offices, so why not that?
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Long commercial-free segment here that will lead into the Sports Hub Celtics show. But we'll pause the Celtics conversation for a moment to talk about the team that's actually deserving of the opposite of how you feel about the Celtics. The team should be getting your love and attention right now, the Boston Bruins. And that that's obviously a clip from the prior series against Columbus. The fake goal that the Blue Jackets got in, I think it was Game 5, right, that went out of bounds, but the refs didn't see it, and they can't use replay against it, so it counts. It made me crazy. And I don't know how much you've been paying attention to what else is going on throughout the NHL playoffs, but in Game 7 between the Colorado Avalanche and the San Jose Sharks, Chris,
I saw it.
Terrible call that would have tied the game at 2-2 in the second period. The Avalanche, who I was rooting for you know, selfish reasons because I want the easier route for the Bruins. But that being said, they get hosed on an offsides call. So the goal comes back. It's 2-1. They ultimately lose the game 3-2. You've seen a lot of bad officiating so far in the NHL playoffs. Hell, I think you saw some bad officiating in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Bruins and the Hurricanes. I thought the Bruins were getting screwed six ways to Sunday in the second period. They're missing calls, too many men on the ice from Carolina. There was a boarding call against Zdeno Chara that they missed, a high stick on David Pastrnak. Now, granted, they got those calls back in the third period, but those were soft calls against Dougie Hamilton, who's a kitten for the Hurricanes, and I was actually glad that they happened because the Bruins were owed them. Overall, though, replay. Replay's the issue, and I know you wanted to...
Yeah, so I just feel like, look, we talk about this, and I think it's relevant, too, because of what's going to happen in the NFL this year with the ability to review pass interference. And you had John Perry, the former NFL official, come out and say today that if they had this rule in play in the Super Bowl this past season, that they would have called Stephon Gilmore for interference on Brandon Cooks. And so when I look at it, like, replay just by itself, the mechanism, the technology, it's great. There's nothing wrong with replay. It's human beings that screw it up. We're the problem. So I hear people rant against replay. It's like, no, we have the technology to make these sports better, to make sure that the adjudication is fairer. But the problem is human beings get in the way. So like the NHL, for example, that play that we just played where Tuukka Rask got robbed of a shutout there. You know, thank God the Bruins end up winning that game. But the technology exists to be able to clearly see what happened and to be able to take that goal off the board. But no, the general managers decided that, like, unless it goes directly in off the netting or the first person that touches it, that's their problem. Major League Baseball, when a guy's out at second base, he steals second base and his finger comes off the bag for a nanosecond and they've decided they're going to rule that guy out. Is that the technology's fault or is that just human beings not applying it in a common sense manner, being idiots? I'd say that's human beings being idiots. So when I look at a lot of this stuff, I don't want to condemn replay. Like, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have the technology to fix things and make it better. The problem here is human beings. We have to use it better, and we have to apply some common sense. And don't create stupid rules like the one that allowed that Artemi Panarin goal in Game 4 for Columbus, or like what the NFL has decided to do with something like pass interference, which I think is dumb and just a complete overreaction to what happened in New Orleans in a game they had a chance to win anyway and still could have won if Drew Brees didn't throw a terrible interception. So when I look at it, the issue here, it's the human factor, human error, operator error. That's the issue with replay, not replay itself.
Yeah, and we're too far through the door in terms of the technology and how it's used and how it's used in all the sports that we can't go back and have it the way that I want it, and that's to get rid of all of it. I'm with Felger on this. Like, I hate it, and I hate how it slows down the product no matter what you're watching. But you're right on this. I've said for years on replay, the thing with it is it's just use it for common sense and for crucial plays. Apply common sense for crucial plays. That should be it with instant replay. So now that it can be used against pass interference, like, I'm terrified of that.
I am too. And even like Albert, like what you're saying, Jim, you're saying like an obvious mistake that needs to be overturned. Not
like what happened in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, not like Alberto Riveron, the direct vice president of officiating for the NFL, sort of sitting up there on that Kelvin Benjamin play with the Patriots last year and being like, I think that this is 51-49, not a touchdown. So I'm going to overturn this. That's like not what it was designed for. You know, it basically the idea should be leave it in place, and it's designed. And that's what drives me crazy. You'll see in the NFL, somebody like Riveron will overturn a touchdown like that, but then an obvious mistake that it's made for. This is replay was created to overturn an obvious mistake that everybody misses, like that goal in Columbus. They say, no, we can't do that because the humans have decided that even though we have the technology, we're going to do the rule. We're going to apply the rule this way. Again, replay is not the problem. It's the application of replay that is the issue.
I bet they just didn't read the instructions. This was something my dad used to yell at me about all the time, because I was always like a gadget nerd and still you forget your first Nintendo, like you open up the box, you just want to plug it in and figure it out later. But my dad would be the one like, nope, we need to read the instruction book first. Like, I just want to play Duck Hunt. Come on. Nope, we got to learn about it first. Because, you know, I think that's what it is. People just like, nope, we'll figure it out later. But they, you know, what happened in that game seven between the Avalanche and San Jose?
That was criminal.
That's a perfect example of when I say common sense for crucial plays. What happened there, you know, the guy's toe being a hair offside.
It was a line change. Landeskog was coming off the ice.
Had nothing to do with the actual play and the goal scored. You know, so you shouldn't get the opportunity to look at it there and slow the game down and take the goal back.
Well, I have to say, I mean, you know, get ready. You know, when you're watching your Thursday night football, there's going to be a play in a game where there's pass interference that's completely away from the play, totally away from the play, and they're going to replay it and say, oh, that guy on the other side of the field that I'm just going to throw a name out there, you know, Baker Mayfield didn't even see, probably didn't even know was an eligible receiver in the pattern. Yeah, that guy got interfered with, so first down Browns.
So that fake goal, that was game four in Columbus when that happened. You were in the building last Saturday covering the Bruins for the Globe.
Yeah.
Do you, with this team, and what you, if you saw game one against Carolina in the Eastern Conference Finals, just how this whole run has been and their resiliency, which I think is a real thing and their best attribute this year, do you feel like this is a cup team? Like,
I do. You know, so I wrote a column earlier this week. It might have been a little strong, but I really feel like this is a golden opportunity for the Bruins, for this group, for this core, for Marchand, Bergeron, Krejci, Chara, to get their name in the cup a second time, and that changes their legacy. Maybe not
totally.
You know, in Boston, it will change it a little. They'll be beloved, whatever. But in the history of professional hockey in the NHL, it's a big deal to go from being a one-time winner to multiple championships. And when I look at the remaining field, I feel like the Bruins are not only the favorite, but they're the team that should be hoisting the cup over their heads at the end. And this is a tremendous opportunity that I'm not sure. I mean, think about this, Jim. You can win the Stanley Cup and you don't have to take out the Lightning, the Capitals, the Penguins, the Calgary Flames, the Winnipeg Jets, the Nashville Predators, or the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
You don't have to take out any of those teams.
I'm not going
to
sleep on the Sharks, though. That's a very good team. Those defensemen are enormous. Carlson's now healthy. Martin Jones is their weak link. I think he kind of stinks. But more than anything else, with the play that they're getting from Tuukka Rask in this run, and he saved their asses in that second period the other night in game.
Totally.
Like, that's what they really got to take advantage of right now. And the window that's remaining on Chara and what they have with Bergeron and Krejci, the year that he's had. Like, it's... I've been all aboard the Bees train for a while. Like, they're a blast. And I just, you know, you can tell, and from guys that cover the team, like Ty Anderson here at the Sports Hub, you read him, and he's been writing about it for a while. Like, just the feel in the room. And I think he said it's like this is the closest knit group that he's seen since that 2011 Bruins team that ended up winning the cup. And you can just kind of feel it, too, you know? Like, even... Coyle gets in that scrum the other night, and then it's Bergeron that comes back, comes over to like, Brad Marchand, like the pest of all pests, to come pull Coyle off the guy that he's getting in the scrum with, and it's like, well, all right, well, here's Marchand not only just playing
the voice
smart,
of
but
reason.
He gets it. Yeah, here's he being the voice of reason. Like, they just get it. They're a good group. I love them.
Things you mentioned, too, and, you know, look, I don't like to get into this team's likable versus this team's not, but the one thing, and Jaylen Brown said this about the Celtics. He said, you know, we lack the fortitude to fight through adversity. The Bruins have displayed that fortitude in the playoffs. They've trailed in both of their playoff series. And, you know, they were on the brink of elimination, obviously, against Toronto. And so they've come back multiple times in their playoff series to get to this point. And they've really shown that when the money's on the table and they need to be at their best, that they can do it. And to me, that speaks to the character of a team.
All right, enough positivity. Let's get back to the negativity and pick at the carcass that is the 2018-2019 Boston Celtics as we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show. Last one of the year? I don't know. Nobody tells me anything. We'll get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone. It's 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.